Sankofa Books, in partnership with WPFW, presents the Black Space Music Series. This Thursday, January 18th, Natalie Greffel and Queen Esther, composers, musicians, and vocalists that stand on the verge of the Black diaspora, delve into their treasure trove of songs and the stories that inspired them. The evening's offerings will move from low country Harlemite Queen Esther's Black Americana to Mozambican Natalie Greffel's Afro-Brazilian dream state, all the while centering Black feminism, creating an oral sanctuary for the audience, and embracing the transcendent web of a Black culture that is the heartbeat of American music. Sankofa Books and Cafe is located at 2714 Georgia Avenue Northwest. Seating is limited, so the event will sell out. Tickets and details at sankofa.com or at 202-234-4755. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Peace, y'all. This is Rod Stars.
This is G1. Together, we Rebel Diaz.
And when we out here in D.C., the DMV, we bump WPFW.
Washington.
Every Tuesday, 9 to 10 a.m., Voices with Vision. You heard?
We've been trying to move this struggle from a lower to a higher level.
This is Voices with Vision, bringing you news and analysis.
It's about cutting-edge social justice issues by mixing various voices and ideas
with information, cultural expressions, and commentary.
Voices with Vision airs every Tuesday on your jazz and justice station, WPFW.
Greetings, listeners. Welcome to the January 16th, 2024 edition of Voices with Vision. Nefer here in the virtual studio with co-host Brother Craig. What's happening this morning, Brother Craig?
Hey, good morning, Nefer, and good morning to our radio listeners and our podcast subscribers. Hey, this morning we're going to speak with professor, author, and Black Alliance for Peace member Peter Hudson about the significance of the latest feature in Black Agenda Review, the 1966 speech of Haitian revolutionary Paul Lantimo.
We'll also pay tribute to the revolutionary life of Sekou Odinga, former member of the Organization of Afro-American Unity, the Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, and former political prisoner who just transitioned to Ancestry last Friday, January 12th. For that, we'll replay a segment Voices with Vision produced 10 years ago honoring Odinga and the movement to free all political prisoners.
We start the show this morning with a message from Omia Abu-Jamal for Bob Wells, Presente, commemorating the life of Bob Wells of the John Brown Anti-Klan Committee and other anti-racist affiliations. For all our political prisoners and freedom fighters behind prison walls, what's the call?
Free them all.
For Bob Wells, Presente. For Bob Wells, a life lived long was a life lived well. For he wore many hats, organizer, anti-racist activist, supporter and worker with the John Brown Anti-Klan Committee in Chicago, teacher, investigative reporter, magazine editor, seaman, hotel and restaurant cook, and banquet chef. He was a key activist in anti-prison and abolitionist work with the Labor Action Committee in San Francisco, and finally, a self-defense instructor. But if you really wanted to know Bob Wells, all you had to do was read it. Inspired by the classic works of Mark Twain, Bob Wells wrote of Huckleberry Finn and fugitive slave Jim, who both met up with John Brown and his fellow abolitionist fighters before the coming of the U.S. Civil War. If you haven't already done so, I urge you all to read the book entitled Passing Through to the Territory by Robert Wells. His work is a wonderful piece of work, a novel of historical fiction of what might have been. On every page is Bob's fine and rich anti-racist imagination. 2 years ago, unfortunately, Bob had a stroke. And today, he is no longer with us. He is with his ancestors. But we remember him through his work, his wisdom, and his fight for labor and the oppressed. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio. Sekou Odinga, warrior, Black Panther, Black Liberation Soldier, named after African warriors and statesmen. Sekou Touré, the Marxist first president of an independent Guinea. And Odinga Odinga, the Kenyan freedom fighter for Mau Mau. Sekou Odinga, prisoner of the White Empire. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Sekou Odinga was a U.S.-held political prisoner imprisoned for over 33 years for fighting for the freedom of black people and the building of the Republic of New Africa. He was released November 25, 2014, into the arms of family, comrades, and friends. In 1965, he joined the Organization of Afro-American Unity, founded by Malcolm X. In 1968, he helped found the Bronx Black Panther Party and later went underground with the Black Liberation Army. He was arrested in 1981 and charged with involvement in the liberation of Assata Shakur from prison and the Brinks expropriation. Convicted in 1984, he was sentenced to a consecutive 25 years to life state sentence and 40 years federal. On Sunday, November 1st, 2015, at the UDC David A. Clark School of Law, the Jericho Legal Committee, the UDC chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, and the National Black United Front organized the forum Freedom Ain't Free, from Harriet Tubman to Sekou Odinga.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to UDC Law School. My name is Najee Mujahid. I'm a student here, a third-year student, also a member of the Jericho Movement and the Black August Planet organization, which has been in hiding since I started law school. I'm really pleased to have you all out and pleased to have our guest in particular. This is a program that we've done here, is it 3 years now, Jen, or four? This is our third annual commemoration of Assata Shakur's liberation. So it's very nice to have here this year to speak with us, Brother Sekou Odinga, who was instrumental
in that escape being successful. And he paid a heavy price for it. You know, he's just getting home after, I think, 33 years. You know, so that's a long time to be away. So we're going to talk more about that. But first,
Sekou Odinga. Sekou Odinga's story reads like something from Hollywood. If you knew the story of Sekou Odinga, you would say, damn, they need to make a movie out of this. You got to figure out who's going to play him. Sekou Odinga was one of the original indictees in the Panther 21 case. When they came to get Sekou like they came to get me, Sekou slipped out the window, down the drain pipe, behind the cordon and escaped. Last time Sekou showed up, he was in Cuba. Then when the Cuban mission moved to Algeria, Sekou went with them. Sekou was... it's really amazing. And after all of this, he comes back in the country and works underground and helps free Assata Shakur from prison. Now, they made a movie, Free Angela, but there should have been a movie called Free Sekou Odinga.
I agree.
Because that man's story embodies all of the elements of courage, determination, fortitude, love of his people that you could want in any hero in any book that has a happy ending. I just wanted the people to know that we weren't talking about someone. I mean, all of the political prisoners are dynamic. Don't get me wrong. They all dynamic in their own way. But Sekou Odinga experience covers the whole breadth of the COINTELPRO counterintelligence repression from domestic to international and back again. So I just wanted you to know who Sekou Odinga was.
I think very few of us were probably fortunate enough to be raised into the movement. You know, for most of us, there was probably some kind of epiphany or a person or an event that brought us, you know, to where we are now. And one of them for me was after I became a journalist, the first press conference I went to go cover was over at the Trans-Africa Forum. And it was Jill, Sophia, Eliza, and several members of the San Francisco 8. And that introduced me to the concept of political prisoners, particularly in the United States. And, you know, as I began to learn more about that, I saw it as, you know, one of the most important, if not the most important, aspects of our activism. And as I was preparing for today, I reviewed, you know, this book, who I think most of you have read. If you haven't read it, you should go back and give it a second look. I read it for the first time about 10 years ago, and it inspired me so much that I named my second daughter after her, who had just recently been born around the time I read the book. And this was actually my first time going back to like really read through the book in the past 10 years. And you know, I realized certain books that need to be reread over and over again. Malcolm's autobiography, which I'm gonna go back and get to because I haven't touched that book probably in about 15 years. Soledad Brother and books like that. And so I got stuck on page 52 because there's a poem on here that I think a lot of us have heard lately, and it is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love each other and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains. And on that same page, there's a line in the third paragraph. It says, every time a black freedom fighter is murdered or captured, the pigs try to create the impression that they have quashed the movement, destroyed our first forces, and put down the Black Revolution. And you know, this is where the political prisoner support comes in, because when our, you know, leaders and, you know, the most, you know, vigilant among us can be captured and put away and forgotten, that doesn't say much about the rest of us. You know, as was I think repeated last night, you know, several times, no other movement, no other group of people in the world let their political prisoners, you know, disappear without, like, that's usually the first demand. You know, when you then, you know, I think a few years ago, you saw it in Palestine. Before we can even have any kind of discussion or peace and reconciliation or negotiation, you need to let our political prisoners go first. It happened with this in Cuba, where the Cuban government was like, you know, they're trying to rebuild relationships with Cuba. Well, Cuba said, we need our political prisoners back. And then we can have some further discussion. You know, that support is somewhat diminished. You know, there are those of us who are involved, and we know, but there's not a whole lot of fanfare involved with folks getting out. And I think, you know, Sekou, when they were speaking last night, when I walked in, the discussion was about the children of these folks and the lack of support. I mean, even like Malcolm, you know, someone who we all know and claim to love. What happened to his family after he was assassinated? You know, so as long as our, you know, enemy, our oppressors know that all we got to do is kill them off or lock them up, and that'll be the end of their little movement. You know, I mean, where does that leave us? You know, that first of all isn't very inspiring for people who want to come do this work if they know that something happened to me. You know, my family's going to be asked out because the movement ain't going to support them. You know, so why would anybody want to risk their life, you know, when they know what they're really doing is risking their lives of their, you know, family and loved ones who they're not going to be there for, and neither is anybody else. So I think, you know, as we continue in our efforts, you know, we have to remind ourselves that, you know, this is, you know, priority number one.
Blackness goes as molten gold from the motherland sea.
Let's give Sekou a round of applause, please.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadar Rasulullah. That's basically to say I bear witness that there is no God but God, and Muhammad was his last servant and slave. Assalamu alaikum. Free the land. Hotep, power to the people. Hi, y'all. Yeah, I'm really glad to be out here today to see you all out here. I want to thank those who organized this for bringing me out here. Thank you to Brother Salim, Brother Najee, Brother Thomas. This is a brother that was writing me while I was in the joint. I never met him until the day, and it's really a pleasure to meet him. He's been on the front line for us for a long time. Kokai, that's my little brother. I've known him since he was a little guy. A little cool guy, like the brother said. He was always a little cool guy. I was just telling my wife that earlier today, how cool he used to be. See, he don't know he done got a little older. He still think he 23, but we ain't gonna bust his bubble. We gonna let him in. It's okay. But we're here today, I think, to celebrate the liberation of Assata Shakur. One of the things I think that is important about that is to know why it was necessary to liberate her. You know, she was someone who did the same thing that a whole lot of other brothers and sisters done back then. She was a sister that got up at 3:30 in the morning to cook breakfast for kids. She was a sister that used to go to the welfare office with other sisters to demand that they get what they had coming. She was a sister that not only did that, but she was a sister who, when the time came, picked up a gun and said, "No, not here. If you shoot here, we shoot back." You know, so, and that's just a little bit, because it's a time restraint here, because we could talk about who Sister Assata Shakur was and why she deserved for us to come get her for a long time. But like I said, there's a time restraint. I think I would like you all to know, though, that there's other people right here in this here country now who did the same thing that Assata did that no one has been able to go get yet. The opportunity presented itself to get Assata Shakur. It wasn't, you know, something that we can do for everybody. That's not something that's possible to do for everybody. So there are those who was with her, like Sundiata Akoli, who's been in jail now ever since she was in jail, which makes about 40 some years now. He's over 40 years he's been in jail, and they're still holding him. He was ordered released. The judge ordered him released, and the state of New Jersey appealed that order, and that keeps him in jail on the appeal, you know, even though they probably know they're going to lose that appeal, and they probably will lose the appeal, but that's already another year that they've been able to keep him in there for that appeal. This is a diabolical thing that they're doing to people. We got a person that did the same thing that Assata did, that did his time in the federal penitentiaries around this country, and now they're holding him down in Atlanta 11 years. He's been free. Actually finished his time 11 years ago, and what they call this, Homeland Security, have decided that they don't think he should be out. And they're holding him for 11 years. Veronza Bauer has been held captive for nothing, for absolutely nothing. What he was sentenced for, he did the time already. So now he's being held because he's a black man who dared to struggle, who dared to believe that they could get some justice, who dared to believe, like Assata dared to believe, that we had a right to liberation, we had a right to freedom, that we had a right to be an independent people, a self-respecting people, a person who could stand up and say, I don't want to be oppressed. They dared to struggle. You know, they say if you dare to struggle, then you dare to win. Well, they dared to struggle and they dared to win, but they paid a hell of a sacrifice for it. Their families, as I heard someone saying up here, they paid a hell of a sacrifice for it. Asada has a daughter who has a daughter. You know, she's a grandmother who haven't seen her grandmother but three or four times because of the distance and the difficulty to get to see her grandmother. You know, her daughter sees her almost, what, once a year sometimes, if that. Sometimes it's a couple of years between the time she see her mother. And when she first seen her, it was like, I think she was, what, about 10, 11 years old then, you know. And everybody seems to forget that Asada's daughter had a father. You know, her father is still in prison. In prison because he refused to become a traitor. They went to him, I think Daquie was saying last night. They went to him and asked him, or told him, we need you to go to Cuba and set her up so we can grab her. And he said, no, I can't do nothing like that. I would never do that. You know? He said, you'll do it or you'll spend the rest of your life in prison. He said, well, y'all got to do what y'all got to do, but there's no way I'm going to do that. I'm not going to be a traitor to my people. And he's been in jail for the rest of his life. He's now sick. He's elderly, you know, and we forget him. How many people know who Kamal is? What's Kamal's last name? Siddiqui. Kamal Siddiqui. Who knows who Kamal Siddiqui is? We don't even know who he is. And that's a shame. You know, we don't know who, too many people don't know who Abdullah Majid is. I heard somebody call David Gilbert's name a little while ago. How many people know who David Gilbert is? Three people. That's crazy. You know, this is a man that gave up his life for us. He's a white man with plenty of money. His people got money, you know. But he was someone who said, I don't want to be associated with the oppression of people. I would rather be on the other side of history.
Be like her, the revolution gonna reoccur. Be Sekou, be Jalil. Who really wanna get free for real? Be a soldier, be a rebel. Who wanna take it to another level? Be a G, be a late. If you want some liberation, better start today. Don't be like Mike, we gotta be like Fred Hampton. That's right, that's what I said. We gotta be the Honda, be your Sada. Baby and a rifle, black power, mama. Don't be no snitch and don't be no peer. The comrades come and get you, split your wig. Just be yourself, that's enough. What you really wanna be when you grow up? Everybody wanna be a star today. So much going on in the galaxy. Jimmy said he wanna be a rapper, but have you ever thought of being an adapter? 10 years from now, will you be able to change? Will you love the game and will you think the same? Will you think I ain't woke up with no capitalism? You don't pay your taxes and you throw you in prison? What you really know about sacrifice? Giving your life, paying the price. The price of freedom is death sometimes. Better that than dumb, deaf and blind. Make a weak heart lose breath and mind. Huey P. Newton came just in time, so I'ma be like him. I'm getting it in until it opened the pen, because we're destined to win. Hasta victoria. Siempre. I am Fidel, I am Jay, I am Toussaint, I'm Senge, us, revolutionary sensei. See, I work for the people, the streets is my office. So Uncle Sam, keep your damn hands up off us. It's about to be a riot from the workers to the bosses. Obama gon' just double cross us. Fuck him, you gotta be like him, or be like her. The revolution gonna reoccur. Be Sekou, be Jalil. Who really wanna get free for real? Be your soldier, be your rebel. Who wanna take it to another level? Be a G, be a late. If you want some liberation, better start the day.
Be free like a breeze in the ocean. Be free to be who and where you wanna be.
Yeah, I wanna be free like Frida. Yes, I said Frida. See so much freedom every time I see her. She painted pictures, she saw herself. She painted the revolution that she saw herself. And that's real, change that's real. When you think of revolution, how does it feel? Would you risk your life or kill or sit in a cell like Sekou and Jalil? Brought it back for the cause. I did it all for the cause. Stay in tune with the sun and the moon. Got so much love for Russell Maroon. That's Schwalz, he's the boss. 39 years behind them walls. 22 years without no calls. Banging on the system till they freedom all. To Lolita Lebron. Viva la revolución. Siempre mi corazón. It's cause of you I fight on. You got to be like you, don't be like them. Don't be no phony, don't be my friend. Just be right there when I need you. Oscar, we fight till they free you.
Look, you gotta be like him, or be like her. The revolution gonna reoccur. Be Sekou, be Jalil. Who really wanna get free for real? Be your soldier, be your rebel. Who wanna take it to another level? Be a G, be a late. If you want some liberation, better start the day.
But if you're looking for a hero, don't look any further. Revolutionary, but you still can't murder the revolution. It's our solution because the revolution has come.
Off the pig
for our daughters and sons.
Off the pig,
free Sekou from in jail.
Off the pig,
or we gon' give them hell.
Off look, the pig. You gotta be like him, or be like her. The revolution gonna reoccur. Be Sekou, be Jalil. Who really wanna get free for real? Be your soldier, be your rebel. Who wanna take it to another level? Be a G, be a late. If you want some liberation, better start the day.
And give them the support. Give them your help. Help them with a letter, with a dollar. Call their support committee. Call their family. You know, their family needs help, you know. I remember what my children went through while I went, especially when they were very young. I left, all my children were very young. I had two children that were teenagers and the rest of them were preteens, you know. And they suffer. They suffer right along with the prisoner, whether it be mommy, daddy, granddaddy, grandmommy. They suffer, you know. Find out some of the families and give them a call. Ask them, can you help? Maybe you can pass down some of your children's clothes to them. We do that now. We got a grandchild that whenever her clothes get a little tight on her, we pass it down to one of the prisoners or Sada's daughter or somebody else's child and give it to them instead of throwing it away or giving it to Goodwill. Give it to somebody that really needs it and really have struggled for you. So that's all I really wanted to say.
Sekou Odinga, born June 7th, 1944, joined the ancestors January 12th, 2024. Rest in peace. For Voices with Vision, I'm Netfer Freeman. Netfer Freeman in the virtual studio with Brother Craig. On the 220th anniversary of the Haitian independence, the Black Agenda Review reprinted the speech given at the first Solidarity Conference of the Peoples of Africa, Asia, and Latin America by Haitian revolutionary Paul Latimo. And to talk about that, and it has some significance because it's actually literally the anniversary of it, on January from the 1st to the 16th, I believe. And here to unpack the significance of that conference, that speech, is Peter James Hudson, Associate Professor of Geography at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. He's the author of Bankers and Empire, How Wall Street Colonized the Caribbean. And he's also a member of the Black Alliance for Peace Haiti Americas team and also a former guest on Voices with Vision. Peter, welcome back to Voices with Vision.
Thanks for having me.
Peter, Black Agenda Review, as Netfer was pointing out, has just reprinted for scholars and organizers in the ongoing movement for justice and freedom. not only for Haiti, but everywhere that people are oppressed by these forces of racism and capitalism and imperialism. A speech by Haitian revolutionary Paul Lantimo, given at the first Solidarity Conference of the Peoples of Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Can you give us some background on Paul Lantimo, who he is, and what was the conference that first took place in 1966? What was this conference?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me first just back up a little bit even further than that and just say for your listeners who may not know, the Black Agenda Review is really the political education supplement of the great Black Agenda Report. And the review was founded after conversations with the late Glenn Ford in the fall of 2020. And what we try to do here is publish manifestos, older speeches that both give us some sense of the history of the Black struggle, but also of present-day strategies for Black struggle. And so this speech by Paul Lantimo from 1966 for us falls directly within that pattern. And the unfortunate part about this speech is we did some research on Paul Lantimo. We could find very, very little on him other than his mention within State Department reports. What we do know is that he's part of a radical tradition of Haitian communists. In the 1960s, there was supreme repression by the Duvalier against Haitian radicals and Haitian communists in particular. But there was a number of groups whose numbers we don't know. We don't know if they number in the hundreds or the thousands, who were engaged in militant struggle against the U.S.-supported Duvalier regime. There was a number of Haitian organizations. The one that Paul Lantimo was the head of was the Unified Democratic Front of National Liberation, or the FDULN. It was an anti-imperialist and anti-feudal organization founded in 1964 that was formed out of a merger of two Haitian communist parties who were fighting Duvalier. One of these parties was more aligned with the Soviet Union, the other with Castro's Cuba. And they wanted to form a kind of democratic front that would unite all classes of Haitian society against the Duvalier regime, whether it was Haitian workers and peasants or Haitian intellectuals and even business classes. And they're also interested in understanding the fight against Duvalier as a broader fight against U.S. imperialism and neocolonialism in the Caribbean and around the world. And to that end, they supported the fight against the U.S. occupation in the Dominican Republic after the U.S. overthrow of Juan Bosch in the Dominican Republic. And they also supported the causes of Cuba and Vietnam, which then brings us to the second part of your question for the first Solidarity Conference of the Peoples of Africa, Asia, and Latin America, held in Havana, Cuba, from June 3rd to 16th in 1966. This was a conference that came 10 years after the Bandung Conference in Indonesia in 1955, which was a kind of conference of basically of third world solidarity. That kind of gave us the term non-alignment and the movement during the Cold War to link people who were generally radicals, but not necessarily aligned with either the U.S. or the Soviet Union. And while the Bandung Conference was a conference of states, the first Solidarity Conference of People of Africa, Asia, and Latin America was a conference of social movements. And so we had labor unions, student organizations, syndicalist organizations, political parties, and liberation factions from Puerto Rico, Palestine, and around the world gathered in Havana, inspired by the armed struggles in Cuba and Vietnam, to discuss and to foment anti-imperialist struggle and guerrilla warfare around the world.
Yeah, and then I think there's just a lack of education on the history of internationalist movements and the Global South, Unity for Decolonization. So that Solidarity Conference actually also gave rise to, and if you could say a little bit more about the permanent structure, USPAL, because a lot of people don't know about that, and also has implications and a profound impact on how people understand, the lack of understanding of that has implications for how people understand the strengthening multipolarity and geopolitics of today.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really important point to raise. I think more people know USPAL than they realize it, because USPAL is also really known for its amazing kind of graphic activism through the posters, the solidarity posters that were produced from the 60s up until the 1980s to draw attention to causes around the world, basically. And we know them through the Tricontinental, which is an organization that's been kind of revamped largely through Vijay Prashad and his Tricontinental newsletters. And like you said, it was an organization that was trying to build solidarity between peoples. And I think further to your point, what's important, and I think what's important about it now, given the current kind of global political configurations that we see, it's an organization of solidarities of people who are not necessarily in the global north. It's people of Asia, people of Africa, people of Latin America, who are kind of speaking across these imperial geographies to find common cause and find solidarities. And so there was a series of conferences that Oswald produces. There was support for liberation movements around the world. There was kind of information sharing about the methodologies of imperialism and imperialism, colonialism, and neocolonialism. Unfortunately, the Cuban government, which had largely been funding it through the 70s and 80s, stopped funding it in the 1980s. But we could definitely use something like that right now. And especially, I think, with the kind of global protests that we've seen in support of the Palestinian people, I mean, to be able to link that the Palestinian cause to, say, the Haitian cause. And I think the other important part of the reason we wanted to publish this speech is also it was appearing, as you pointed out, on the 220th anniversary of the Haitian Revolution, but also the 20th anniversary of the second occupation of Haiti, which begins with the kind of deposing of Haiti's first democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and continues on to the present through the forces of the U.S., Canada, France, the core group, the United Nations, and other nefarious neocolonial entities.
Yeah, you led right into what was what's going to be my next question, which is, you know, in your introduction of this reprint of Paul Atimo's speech, you give some context of what Haiti has recently faced in terms of foreign control, of intervention, and what it's facing now. For those who don't know the details, or perhaps maybe have forgotten, can you give us a brief overview of the situation in Haiti today?
Yeah, I think I can. And I think I would like to do this by, again, referring back to Lentimo's speech, because I think what he offers us and what we hope that the speech offers us is a kind of historical analogy to understand what's happening now. Lentimo points to the fact that under Duvalier, we had the State Department basically supporting a dictator in Haiti. That dictator controlled the Haitian state and mobilized the Haitian state against Haitian people. It repressed intellectuals and teachers. It repressed peasants. It repressed workers. And there was this collusion between the Haitian state and the U.S. State Department that created a situation of total repression. And in some ways, that's what we're faced with right now in Haiti. We have a prime minister in Haiti by the name of Ariel Henry, who was not democratically elected. He was put into power after the assassination by, it seems, U.S. forces of the previous president. There hasn't been elections in years. The Haitian economy is controlled in part by a small light-skinned oligarchy in Haiti, but also by foreign mining interests, foreign banking interests, etc. And also we're now faced with another threat of straight-up military occupation, where the U.S. through the United Nations is tapping Kenya to lead forces, military forces into Haiti, ostensibly to bring stability to the country, but what they're actually talking about is repressing the popular forces who are fighting against the neocolonial regime. So I think, you know, we can see in Lentimo's speech parallels with what's happening today, but also I think what Lentimo offers us is a possibility of change for Haiti, because what he speaks to, again, is this a need for class solidarity within Haiti against neocolonialism and imperialism. He speaks to the need for solidarity across borders between Haitians and Dominicans against, and then Haitians and other people in the Caribbean and Latin America against imperialism. And he sees a need for solidarity globally against neocolonialism and imperialism wherever it may be found. So I think there's something really important in the historical blueprint that he offers us for revolution. And I think what's important about that too is, while we might not know Lentimo's name and we might not know him as someone who's successful, we have to remember that the Duvalier regime was eventually deposed And for a brief moment, there was popular democracy in Haiti. So I think there's also a sense of hope there in a moment where I think everywhere we see despair, but there is a possibility of popular democracy and revolution, or as Len Timo says in his title, a black revolution in Haiti will repeat itself.
I think I have time to jump in here and just ask this. You know, we've seen in the past, there was a time when the Congressional Black Caucus and you had Trans Africa, and there was that sort of establishment black leadership in the United States, bringing a lot of attention and engaged in a lot of political activity and protest, trying to change the United States' relationship with Haiti to something that was more favorable than what it had been. And we're talking about now with the core group, and you're speaking about the interventions and Duvalier, you know, Papa Doc and Baby Doc being supported, these dictators being supported by the United States. In the United States now, with African people, black people, people of African descent, where do you see our support in terms of the masses of the people and in terms of the so-called, you know, leaders in the U.S. government? Where do you see us getting involved and taking an interest in what the United States is so involved in doing against the Haitian people?
That's an excellent question. I think, again, kind of looking historically, I think it's important to point out that this piece that we've republished was originally published in English in a journal called Soul Book that was published by the Revolutionary Action Movement. And this is a movement, this is an organization and a journal published that was active in the late 1960s, coming out of the civil rights movement, that was looking to, it was an African-American journal that was looking to Africa, to a kind of politics of third worldism and Pan-Africanism, to both support those struggles abroad, but also to deepen the domestic struggles of blacks within the United States. Unfortunately, I think we're at a bit of a low point in terms of those solidarity movements. Unfortunately, we have people like Lloyd Austin, who may or may not be alive right now, who's in some ways leading this kind of global war of state terror against third world people on behalf of Raytheon and U.S. interests. We have people like Linda Thomas-Greenfeld, she of the Bloody Hands, working in the United Nations, block attempts to call for ceasefire in Gaza and restrain this terrorist state of Israel. But I also think while we have these black people in power working on behalf of empire, I think the majority of black people are beginning to realize that this game is up. People are seeing the kind of contradictions in their daily lives when you can send billions of dollars to Ukraine and to Israel to support arms and to basically subsidize Raytheon and other military contractors, when we can't have decent health care, decent education, we're burdened with student debt, mortality rates are going up, et cetera, in the United States. So, I mean, I think we're right now at a beginning of a kind of project of solidarity that's deepening by the kind of contradictions that we're seeing globally. I also think that organizations like the Black Alliance for Peace and also the journal Black Agenda Report have been doing an amazing job, and journals like Hood Communist have been doing an amazing job of trying to expose those contradictions, point to those links, and create the kind of platform for the moments of solidarity that we saw earlier on, as is your own radio show, which I really appreciate as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with you on that. And we have to lift up Black Alliance for Peace Zone of Peace campaign, and that the role of us, and I would say like some organizations in BAP, particularly PACA, I mean, hold the internal colony analysis, that those of us that reside inside the borders of Western capitalist countries that are, you know, are internal colony, constituted internal colony. And for us, by extension, I would say that means that we are also an extension of the global South. So it's not just that we're internal colony, but we also have interests that are inextricably bound with those others who we might, if we think we just American, and we think we're American and that's it, then we'll be missing the type of international and internationalist connections that we should have. So I would say that we're really reflection or constitute the Global South within the bowels of the colonial, settler colonialism in this instance. I wanted to ask you, though, talking about the Zone of Peace, CELAC, because the Zone of Peace campaign was originated within the community of Latin American and Caribbean states in 2014 in CELAC. Do you see that as also a successor and an extension, a continuation of the non-aligned movement and the decolonization? What are your thoughts on that? How that?
I think it could be. Honestly, I wish I had a really good answer to it. But it seems to me that the Zone of Peace is still in its early stages. I think there still needs to be a lot of work to extend that idea beyond BAP into other places. And I think that it's difficult sometimes for people who are living in war, in zones of war, to speak of peace. But I think that there's a real possibility for it and a real richness to that struggle that could carry on that longer struggle.
There's a lot of somebody making some noise in the background and getting ready for dinner.
But, yeah, there's some crab soup happening in the back. It's some Ghanaian crab soup, yeah.
Oh, man. So, Will, thank you for that. I think the one thing that I guess we could make talk about in terms of the CELAC and the state declaration for the Zone of Peace, what BAP is trying to do as a non-state actor is build a popular movement to support what the states created back there in 2014. And I think maybe your hesitancy in terms of you defining that as the non-aligned is because they kind of have been, I don't know, they declared it then, but the states haven't really, moved or seen how to more concretize that on that level. But the popular movements, I think, are where when we can do it, then it will push some sort of developments on the level of governments.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly the difficulty I was having in responding to your question is I do think we shouldn't be overly reliant on a state's definitions or plans for these things. And it really has to come from the grassroots, from the people. They have to both understand it, they have to articulate it, and they have to do it. And we can't always trust states. And, you know, we think sometimes that we have progressive leaders like Mia Motley, who will be very eloquent in the United Nations, but very neoliberal at home and very careerist. And so I think I always have a bit of a hesitancy when it comes to state leadership around grassroots movements.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Peter. We want to end by recommending that people read regularly Black Agenda Report, but also in particular Black Agenda Review. You do a lot of primary source documents in there, which I really appreciate about it. We were speaking with Peter James Hudson, Associate Professor of Geography at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver, Canada, author of Bankers and Empire, How Wall Street Colonized the Caribbean, and also a member of the Haiti's Americas team of the Black Alliance for Peace. Thank you, Peter, for being with us.
Thank you both. Hope I can come back again.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be better.
Take good care.
All right.
That brings us to a conclusion. This morning's show included the songs Freedom Ain't Free by D.K. Dyson, Be Sekou by M1 Divine and RBG and Revolutionary Love, and excerpts from the Black Law Students' third annual commemoration of Assata Shakur's liberation in 2015 at the UDC School of Law. Thank you for listening, and remember to tune in to Voice with Vision every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and follow and like Voice with Vision on Facebook.
Turn out tomorrow, Wednesday, January 17th, for PACA's special Assata Shakur Study Group, Gaza and the Radical MLK at 7 p.m. at the 1 D.C.'s Black Workers and Wellness Center, 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C., across the street from Anacostia Metro on the Green Line. If you're so inclined, you can follow me, Nefa, on X, used to be Twitter, Net for Free. That's NETFA free. And don't forget, you can also listen and subscribe to Voices with Vision as a podcast on Google Podcasts, iTunes, or Player FM. Just search for Voices with Vision, WPFW. Keep it here for Crossroads with Roach Brown and Nkechi Taifa. Make an effort to stay politically educated, organized, and committed to the fight for the liberation of your people, or
fall back.
It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people.
Come on.
F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom. L-I-B-R-B-G, we live F-R-E-D-I-E. We lace music with code, just something to bring us closer. Kick true, the young black youth like we supposed to. No swine in our Rovers or Louis Vuitton holsters. We in the trench with young 50 cent and street soldiers. The ones they ain't lock up and send the foreign waters to fight for something they ain't got in their own borders. It's us, the free unit, they ain't holding us back. We just caught a soundtrack to this movement, y'all just rap. Brat, black on black and clap about that. State trooper shot, assemblies boy in the back. Miss Rogers, boy in the back. While we ain't firing back, the boys is gone and they ain't coming back. We gotta go back. San Cole for writing exact. It's the red, green, and the black, black, black. It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people. F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back.
The best in live music entertainment is coming to Bethesda Theater. Peebo Bryson, the legendary voice of love, for two big shows on Friday, January 26th at 8:30 p.m. and Saturday, January 27th at 8 p.m. Celebrate legend Bob Marley at the annual One Love Birthday Bash featuring popular reggae band I and I Rhythm on Saturday, February 3rd at 8 p.m. Celebrate more love at the Quiet Storm Valentine Celebration featuring live performances of classic love songs on Saturday, February 10th at 8 p.m. Peebo Bryson on January 26th and 27th. Bob Marley, the birthday bash on February 3rd. And Quiet Storm Valentine Celebration on February 10th. More info and tickets at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
Sankofa Books, in partnership with WPFW, presents the Black Space Music Series. This Thursday, January 18th, Natalie Greffel and Queen Esther, composers, musicians, and vocalists that stand on the verge of the Black diaspora, delve into their treasure trove of songs and the stories that inspired them. The evening's offerings will move from low country Harlemite Queen Esther's Black Americana to Mozambican Natalie Greffel's Afro-Brazilian dream state, all the while centering Black feminism, creating an oral sanctuary for the audience, and embracing the transcendent web of a Black culture that is the heartbeat of American music. Sankofa Books and Cafe is located at 2714 Georgia Avenue Northwest. Seating is limited, so the event will sell out. Tickets and details at sankofa.com or at 202-234-4755. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Jackie Lukeman.
Peace, I'm Sean Blackman, and we're the hosts of Darker Than Blue, your number one source for struggle, socialism, and soul.
We explore people's movements, news, politics, music, and culture from a perspective that you won't hear from the bought and paid for corporate media.
This is a show by the movement and for the movement. So we don't just want you to listen. We want you to get involved in the effort to change the world for the better.
So check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. beginning January 5th on Pacifica Radio's WPFW.
Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The great jazz master Sonny Rollins always says, music is an open sky. This is Willard Jenkins inviting you to join me for my new WPFW show, Open Sky, Sunday afternoons from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. We'll explore great jazz classics, including many from the beloved Great American Songbook, during our first hour. And then, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. will be my traditional What's New, the new release hour, as we check out what today's contemporary artists are up to with a raft of new releases.